Okay, perfect. Okay, so page 72, into action. Having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? And I've highlighted the next three lines because it said we've been trying to build and get a new attitude and a new relationship with our creator and to discover the obstacles in our path, right? That's the process of step four. We're admitting certain defects and we've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put a finger on the weak items in our inventory, and now these are about to be underlined as cast out, which means we're going to get rid of the unsaleable goods that we spoke about last week. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in recovery, a program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter, page 72, Lisa. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, and underline this, it says we find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient, which means that I can't do it on my own, and I can't see my problems, and I can't see my defects. Because on my own, I'll just think it's all right. Think I'm okay, and I think it's all right to blame people. So I can't see the weak items in stock. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We'll be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do it. And I highlighted the next sentence. It says the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, I underlined it because it's vital, right? This vital step, we may not overcome drinking. It's the first part in action to get rid of the unsaleable goods within ourselves. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. And at the bottom of the page, I wrote page 58, because then it reaffirms back to page 58, the easier, softer way. Right? Some of these we thought we'd find an easier, softer way. The result was nil. Until we let go, absolutely. Okay. Almost invariably, it underlined is they got drunk. Because if you don't complete your house cleaning, if you don't complete the program, you will pick a drink up 100%. Mary, top of page 73, if you've got your book. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they failed. We think the reason is they've never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right. And I highlighted these next three lines. But they hung on to the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they have not learned of enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. I highlight that whole part. Because the important part is when we share this with another person, we can then see our weak items in stock. We can then see where we were at fault. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He's very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. Right? We talk about masks in AA, right? This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his spree. Coming to his senses, he's revolted at certain episodes that he vaguely remembers. The next day, I wrote blackout. Because when we drink, we black out and we're embarrassed about the things that we do. When we get reminded, do you know what you did? Where did you end up? Right? These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think that someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He's under the constant fear and tension, and that makes for more drinking. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know, but for a few instances, that we have been given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, and we have not followed their advice. Bottom of 73, Leslie. And I highlighted this next sentence. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men. We were honest with no one else. We're not honest with our doctors and with our sponsor and with God. Who are we going to be honest with? Small wonder why many in the medical profession have a low opinion on alcoholics and their chance for recovery. And I highlight this next sentence and the top of the page 74 at the end of the sentence to this world. And it says this: we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long and happily in this world. That means we have to be fearless and thorough. All the old ideas that you held on to will not work. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this intimate, confidential step. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, and of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. And some of my step five was done with a priest, and the rest of it was done with my sponsor, right? We often find such a person quick to see and understand our problem. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. If we cannot or would rather not do this, we search for our acquaintance for a closed mouth, understanding friend. I underlined that. The closed mouth understanding friend is the sponsor. And the amount of step fives that I've gone through, I don't remember. My job on a step five is just to point out your defects and point out how you need to make amends. I don't care what you did, who you did it with, and when you did it. It's of no relevance. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. He may be one of our own family, but we cannot disclose anything to our wives or our parents, which will hurt them and make them unhappy. We have no right to save our own skin for another person's expense. Such parts of our story we tell to someone who will understand, yet is unaffected. And I highlighted now this from this next line, this end of the sentence, the end of the paragraph. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. I highlighted that. Notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, he may be one so situated that there's no suitable person available. And if so, this step may be postponed, right? Only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity, underlined it. Which means you can do your step four. You can write that step four out. If you haven't got the right person to do the five, you can sit ready and waiting. You need to be willing at the first opportunity. If you don't treat that condition, you will drink. 100%. We say this because we are very anxious that we talk to the right person. It is important that he be able to keep a confidence, that he fully understand and approve what we are driving at, that we're not trying to change our plan, but we must not use this as a mere excuse to postpone. When we decide to hear our story, and I highlight the next four words, we waste no time. Remember about the program of action? People ask us, how long do we do it? How long does it take? It tells us exactly there. It says at once and next, and now we waste no time. We have written an inventory and we've prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we're about to do it. He should realize that we engage upon, and highlight and underline this, a life and death errand. Because this is what's going to change you. Most people approaching this way will be glad to help. They'll be honoured by our confidence. And I'll highlight the whole page from now on. You can either circle it or highlight it or underline it, the rest of the page. It's going to give me the instructions for step five. It says we pocket our pride and go for it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once having taken this step, withholding nothing, step five promises. We are delighted. Step five promises. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we start to begin to have, and underline this, a spiritual experience. Because it's the blockage of step four and five is keeping God out or the power out. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we now know him better. Taking down this book from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first five proposals. We asked ourselves if we had omitted anything. Now, before we go to step six, it's going to ask us to look at the first five proposals, the first five steps. Do we fully understand what it means to be powerless and unmanageable? Yes. Do we fully understand what in step two, what it means there's a solution? In step two, we come to believe there's a solution to the problem in step one. Yes. And then do we understand in step three why we need God or the keystone in our lives to solve the problem? Of course, because we're powerless and God has the power. And then do we know why we've written that fourth step inventory, the gross, the handicaps, the things that's been blocking us, the unsaleable goods? Yes. And then we share it with another person. And that's the part that's going to free us from the bondage of self, free us from the crap inside that's held us back or unblocked us from God, or blocked us from God. It's going to give us now the lead up to step six. It now says, for we are building an arch for which we walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? And again, next to this, I wrote page 58. Because it said some of these we bought, we thought we could find an easier, softer way. So I tell my sponsors, let's read page 58 to see if them half measures are gone. If you're not one of the cannots on will nots. Page 58 is a warning, remember. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? That means you step one to five. Do you fully understand? Have we skimped on the cement into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Top of 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. And I highlighted the next sentence. It says, we've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. You need to have willingness. We had willingness from step one, and we're going to be repeating it into step six. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things we admit are objectionable with a question mark? And next to that, you can write column four. What part did you play? What defect was involved? Can you now take all of them, every one? I like that. Every single one. Because we can't afford to hold on to some of it. If we still cling on to something, we will not grow. We ask God to help us be willing. Step six is a willingness to change. If you want to unmute, we're going to do the step seven prayer together. Okay, so if you all want to unmute yourselves. It's going to sound great, isn't it? Okay. It then says, when ready, we say something like this. So please join me. My creator.
My creator.
I am now willing now ready to have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove every single defect of character and in the way of my useful to my fellows,
to you and my fellows, to you are my strength, and I go to do your bidding. Amen.
Amen.
As I go out from here.
That's it, just beat yourself. That was horrendous, wasn't it? Okay, if you're muted. I'm going to reread that. Step seven is a step seven prayer that we say every morning. Step three and a step seven prayer. Step three is when we invite God into our lives. Step seven is when we invite God to remove from us. Okay? So that's the difference. Step three, we invite him in to run our lives. And step seven is we invite him to take away, remove from us, right? My creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. He doesn't want the bad stuff. He wants all of it. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Only God can remove your defects. It's not self-help. I can't work on my defects. I can't work on my honesty. Once I'm aware and it become a problem, I ask God to remove them. We're going to come to that in a couple of weeks or next week in step 10. Might be today, actually. It is today. And this is grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. What's God's bidding? To be a decent person, to help other people without reward. That's God's work, right? We have then completed step seven. We don't revisit these. Not once we've read so far does it say that we need to revisit any single step. Because Because when these crop up in September, we're going to ask God to remove them again, right? He says, now we need more action, which we now find, and underline this, that faith without works is dead. We need to help others. We need to do God's bidding. We need to sponsor people. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. When I'm sponsoring people, I have a piece of paper. On one side, I have 6. On one side, I have 9. And on 6 has got your defects. And on 9 has got your list of amends who you need to make amends to that I see, right? We made it when we took in the trip. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and underline this and repair the damage done in the past. Because now you're not the same person as you was 3 pages ago. We're different. We've got God in our lives. He's going to remove our defects. We're not the same selfish, self-centered people. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort and underline this to live life on self-will and run the show ourselves, page 62 next to that. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. And I highlight this again. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. That was the commitment you took when you get sponsored. This is the commitment. Probably there are still some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends that we have hurt. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. I don't go and make amends and tell people that I found God. I found God, I need to make amends. I'm just here to clear the wreckage of the past. Do what I can to set things right. What can I do to help you? How can I set it right? 99% of people will just wish us well and send us on our way. Top of 77, we might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end for itself. And I highlighted these next 2 lines. I highlighted and underlined. And next, I wrote primary purpose. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's our primary purpose, to help other people, right? It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce we have gone all religious in the prize ring. This would be leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to be branded for fanatics or religious bores? I'm going to stop here and just tell you one thing, right? When you've got your list of amends to make amends to, we don't go straight out and bombard people with apologies. When we read the promises out in a couple of pages, they will make it intuitively clear that you know when to do it, when they turn up. Sometimes with my kids, it might be the next day, it might be the next month, it might be the next year. You will know when they are ready. Trust me, you will have a gut instinct to know. We're going to talk about that in a couple of pages. We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. Best our man be sure to be impressed with it. And I know this, with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. There's your instruction in step 9. A sincere and honest desire to set right the wrong that you've done. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill and attend our talk about spiritual discoveries. We don't use this as an excuse from shying away from the subject of God when it will serve any good purpose. We are willing to announce to our convictions and underline with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. He maybe has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit by our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit. Underlined it. Helpful and forgiving spirit. Confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. That's how you approach people you hate. I change that. We dislike. Because of many people we make amends to, we don't want to make amends to. But if you want to be fearless and thorough, It was agreed at the very beginning. And on page 58, the wounds are going to come operative again. You have to go and make amends at some point. We don't just do our get to step 9, do all of our amends, then we go to 10. We're going to go straight into 10. And your 9s will take precedence as the time comes right. Under no obligation do we criticise such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out our past. And I highlight these next two lines. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realising that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. And I highlight this next sentence. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. Because this is our inventory, right? If our manner is calm, frank, and open. Frank, you should tell me that's the only time his name was in the book. Calm, frank, and open, right? We will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So fugitive years stand and melt away in an hour. And I highlight the next sentence. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Because people will just wish us well, right? Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration. We have done our part. It's war over the dam. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway. Whether we think not or so. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless credit will sometimes surprise us. And I highlight this next sentence, arranging the best deal we can. They'll tell you what to do when we owe money. We can let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go. But we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Perhaps we have committed a criminal offence, which might land us in jail if it were known to the authorities. We may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We have already admitted this in confidence to another person. But we are sure we will be imprisoned or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offence, such as padding an expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe we are divorced and have remarried and haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She's indignant about it and has a warrant out for our arrest. That's a common form of trouble too. And I highlight the next whole paragraph. Although these reparations, which means amends, take innumerable forms, there are some general principles we find guided. And I highlight this, reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any lengths for a victory over it, to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, step 9 prayer, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing, we have to be, we must not shrink at anything. And the step 9 prayer will be, thy will, not mine, be done. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. A man we know had remarried and because of resentment and drinking had not paid alimony to the first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life and had secured a position and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he walked up to the judge and said, here I am. We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary. But if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for neither family. We suggested he write his first wife, admitting his faults and asking for forgiveness. He did and also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course she did not. And the whole situation has long been since adjusted. Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we had obtained permission and consulted with others, we ask God to help us help the drastic step as indicated. We must not shrink. This brings to mind a story about one of our friends. While drinking, he accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money and used the incident as a basis of discrediting the man. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. In fact, his rival was ruined. He felt he'd done a wrong and could not possibly make it right. If he opened the old affair, he would be afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent upon him? With a question mark. How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? After consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it's better to take those risks and to stand before his creator guilty of such ruin and slander. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again, and all would be lost anyhow. He attended a church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action was met widespread approval, and today he's one of the most trusted citizens of his town. This all happened years ago. The chances are we will have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But our drinking does complicate sex relations at home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely and sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something else besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret of exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that with a question mark? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure that our wife does not know, should we tell her? Step 9 says may direct amends where possible, except when to do so would injure or harm others. And a quick example on that, my wife a long time ago caught me in bed with another woman. And when I finally went back and made amends, because we'd split up over all this, when we finally went back and made amends, and she asked me if there was others, and I had to lie and say no. Even though there was, because I didn't have the right to put her through more pain and more torment. That's exactly what this is leading up to. Do we tell him it's going to harm him? The answer is no. Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our own fault. She may insist in knowing all about the particulars. She wants to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it should not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be no justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we often find this is the best course to take. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not need to see name a person upon whom she can vent her jealousy. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such a situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of the good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. It's my prayer about it. Having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. Keeping it always in sight, we are dealing with that most terrible human emotion underlying this jealousy. Because everybody is jealous, and it's said the human condition, human emotion. This isn't confined to alcoholics. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk face-to-face combat. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should have done at home. Sometimes we hear to an alcoholic that the only thing he needs to do, and underline this, is to stay sober. Certainly he must stay sober, for there'll be no harm if he doesn't. But he's yet a long way from making good to the wife or the parents, whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes left today, and perhaps we would be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and considerable habits have kept the home in turmoil. He says, we feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. That means just staying sober. That's not changing and sponsoring and helping others. He then says, he's like the farmer who come up from the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't think anything about it, Mark. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? Ain't it grand I'll stop drinking, Mark? Now we can just go back to how life was. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to do nothing about it. I'm not going to make my amends. I'm not going to be a better person. Like the cyclone cellar. Top of 83. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction. I like that. A long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. Frank used to say, your recovery starts from the fireside out. And this is what it talks about. And at the top of the page, I wrote home life. Because we need to make it right at home. Repair the damage done, right? There's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead because we caused the damage. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry will not fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with a family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. Underline that, because now you're sober. Now you can see where you were at fault. Now you can see where you were wrong. We have empathy. We look here for it through a different set of eyes. Being very careful not to criticize them. This is your inventory and your amends. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions, and underline this, are partly responsible. We caused the turmoil in the home. We made the wives and the husband feel jealous and frisky and uncomfortable and inconsistent. We made them like that. It wasn't like that until we become drunks. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator shows us the way, and underline this, patience, tolerance, and kindliness and love. Four instructions for you to do with your amends. The spiritual life is not a theory, and underline this, we have to live it. We have to make good at home. We have to be a better, different person. We have to live in a world of the Spirit. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about the spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. What this paragraph is talking about is then, when I lead by example and live the spiritual life, it affects all my family. The wife I've got today is not an alcoholic. She's got all of our defects. She's an outright mental defective, but she's different when I'm different. So what we do, we lead by example. We have the power to change people without putting it on them, if that makes sense. If I lead in the right way and I'm calm and I'm frank and I'm honest and considerate, it rubs off on people, all right? There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. You're going to get amends like that. They've died. They're not around. They've moved away. Write an honest letter. Some people take it to the graveyard and burn them. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. And I highlighted this next paragraph. It then says what we should be. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate and humble, which we never was to start with. without being servile and scraping. And as God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. That means I set boundaries today. I don't let people take the piss. I set boundaries in a way that are correct in the right manner. Step 9 promises, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, because the past has made you the person you are today. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our benefit can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. It's not all about me today. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. That's the promise you use in your step 9 of amends. You will intuitively know when and how to approach the individuals to make your amends, right? We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They've been fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Okay, I'm going to stop there. I'll carry on. This thought brings us to step 10. Right? We're going to do 10, 11. We suggest we continue to take personal inventory. It's going to give us the instructions of step 10. I highlighted this whole page now, all of the bottom page and all of 85, and then we're going to highlight certain words as we go through or underline. This thought brings us to step 10. We're going to highlight continue or underline continue. He says we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along, because you will make mistakes, but now you've got the tools to correct them. We vigorously commence this way of living as we have cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. It's an instruction. Your next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness of God's will and how you treat others. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue again for our lifetime. It says continue again to watch for. These four things will come. And it's going to give you four answers to the four questions. It then says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Underline them because they will come on a daily basis. It then says when these crop up, because they're going to come, here's the instructions. We ask God at once to remove them. Then we discuss them with someone immediately. And then we make amends if we had harmed anyone. Free instructions. Then it tells you. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. When you get resentful, dishonest, selfish, and afraid and full of fear, love and tolerance is the solution to it. You have to be like that. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Underline them. When I stop fighting, I win. If I'm in an argument with my husband or my wife, and I'm arguing back, I lose. I get frustrated. I get angry. I get inconsiderate. I get selfish. I don't get into the ring room. I go, yeah, okay, no problem. Let's discuss it. For by this time, sanity will have returned. That was step 2, remember? So next day I wrote step 2 because we wanted to be restored to sanity in step 2. Now we are. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recall from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. Underline them. Because that's what we're like today. We're in a world of the spirit. We don't throw our dummies out the prams too often nowadays. And we will find this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes, underline this, this is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. because I'm not powerless now. I got restored to sanity. I've got God in my life. I found the power that I lacked. We are neither cocky nor we are afraid. That is our experience. This is how we react. As long as we remain, we keep in fit spiritual condition, work with others. I say I'm recovered because I found the power that I lack. That's all it means. I found God. I've got God in my life. That's what recovered means. It doesn't mean I'm cured. It's going to give us a warning now. So next to this, you can write warnings. It says it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. The next three lines are highlighted and underlined because these are in another set of instructions for step 10. It says every day, not some days, not part days. Every day is a day that we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. The step 10 prayer, how can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Every day, I set right the new mistakes. The problem got removed. It warns me not to rest up on the spiritual program of action. It says, remain spiritually fit. It says, every day, keep you bring God into your life. How can I best serve thee? Step 3, step 7 prayers. These thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish is the proper use of the will. Next to that, I wrote step 3. Because in step 3, we made a decision to hand our will and life over to the care of God. Now in step 10, he says, you've got your will back, Keith. Because now you've been restored to sanity. Now you're in the world of the spirit. When you set right, when you get the mistakes, you're going to set them right. You have your will back. It's the correct use because it's not all about me, no. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, next out, I wrote 4 to 9, sorry. We have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become, underline this, God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, underline vital sixth sense. Sixth sense is that gut feeling, that intuitive feeling that you just know what's the right thing to do. We know not to be dishonest and selfish, self-centered. We know not to be inconsiderate. The vital sixth sense is an intuition that we just know it's right. You can't see it, you can't touch it, you just feel it. Because now you've got a conscience, right? But we must go further, and that means more action. That makes sense so far? You can nod and wave if you like. Perfect, you're cured. Okay, step 11. Suggest prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter. Better men than us have been using it constantly. It works when we have the proper attitude toward it. That means willingness, right? It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe it can make some definite and valuable suggestions. I highlighted the whole paragraph from when we retire at night down to should be taken. And next to that, I wrote night because it's going to give you 9 questions. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. We're going to review it because we had step 10 through the day. We put in the corrective measures. When we're wrong, we're promptly admitted it. When we set right the new mistakes, it's step 10 for the day, and step 11 is at night. So now in 11, I'm going to review my day. He then says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day because there's going to be some things we forgot, right? I missed. And I underline this, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? In step 10, it was resentful, selfish, dishonest, and fear, right? Afraid is the evening. Fear is during the day. See the difference? Resentful, selfish, dishonest, and fear for the day. Resentful, selfish, dishonest, and was we afraid? We're in past tense. We're looking at the day before, right? Or the daytime. Do we owe an apology? First question. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person? Another question for your inventory. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? Nine questions, right? But we must be careful not to drift, you know, underline this, into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Don't beat yourselves up. God's going to tell us this. Don't drift into that. He says that will diminish your usefulness to others. Don't beat yourselves up. It then says, after making our review, we ask for God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. 10 questions, sorry. What should we do? What God will say is, forget it. Tomorrow's another day. You've done the best you could. It's spiritual progress, not perfection. I highlight the next paragraph because this is on awakening. This is your morning instruction for 11. This is on awakening. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day, right? Before we begin, underlined it. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. Step 3, step 7, breath. Before you make a cup of coffee, before you start doing your hair and putting your lipstick and makeup on, Philip and William, right? We start before we begin, right? Especially asking that it be divorced from underlying self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. We can't afford to take that. We had that in step 3, right? Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. Because we're in God's world, right? We know what's right. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. I highlight this next one sentence. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Right? Normal people say, just count to 10. Just take a step back. That's what we do. We just take a step back. For us, we say the serenity prayer. You can write that next to it. The serenity prayer 3 or 4 times. We may not be able to determine which course of action to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision, and underline this, we relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised that our answers come off. We have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch, underlined hunch, on top of that I wrote 6th sense. Because we spoke about 6th sense in step 10, that intuitive thought. What used to be the hunch, underlying hunch, is now the 6th sense on the top of 87. It says, or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Because you'll intuitively know how to handle these situations. You will know. Trust me. You might not think you know, but you will know. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas, which means you're going to make mistakes. You're going to get things wrong. Doesn't matter. Highlight the next paragraph, the next 5 lines, 6 lines. It says, nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, will means it's going to happen. Will, as time passes, become more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. 6th sense, right? We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that will be shown all through the day of what our next step is to be. And that prayer will be, thy will not mine be done. That we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially the freedom from self-will, underlined self-will. And we're careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others may be helped. And what that means is if you're going to go and do a share or a lead, the prayer you're going to ask is for God, for his will to carry to you. So only time I ask for God's will for me. If I ask for a prayer for me, it's to give the message to you. There's no way I've ever asked for. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. I never won the lottery praying for that. Let's clear that up straight away. Right? Many of us have wasted a lot of time in doing that. And it doesn't work, you can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers. You can choose any prayer you want. I tend to use 3 and 7, but we're not confined to that. It's whatever prayer you want to use, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing, which is handing over self and asking God into our lives. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make sure you use what they offer. And the highlight is built on 3 lines. Because it then tells you about midday, what happens through the day. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We take a step back. We say the serenity prayer, the step three prayer, whatever you want to do. You can call your sponsor or your friend. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Next out, I wrote page 61. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will, not mine, be done. Then we are much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions, right? We have become to be more efficient. We do not tire so easily. For we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange the life to suit ourselves, which was page 61. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. And it's that simple. If we're not sure, we ask. We know what to watch for. We know what to do. We have a spiritual toolkit to take over every problem that comes in your lives. But this is not the all. There's action and more action. And underline this, faith without works is dead again. And the next chapter is devoted to step 12. Let me stop this.